Welcome to HN Pod, your daily audio dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Tuesday, March 24th, 2026, and we are covering the most interesting stuff that hit the front page yesterday, March 23rd. This is episode 344, and we have a really packed and diverse lineup today.
We really do. We will be talking about a fascinating personal project where a developer migrated their entire digital life to the EU. A mind-blowing demo of an iPhone 17 Pro running a massive 400 billion parameter AI model, and GitHub struggling to keep its servers online.
Plus, we will dive into the indie web philosophy of Posse. And finally, we will touch on the tragic news out of LaGuardia Airport and what the Hacker News community is saying about the systemic issues in air traffic control.
Let us jump right in with our first story. A user posted an article on their personal blog detailing their journey of migrating all their digital services to the European Union. The post got over 800 points and sparked a massive debate. The author decided to move away from non-EU providers, primarily for data protection and geopolitical reasons, arguing that the EU currently has the most user-friendly privacy laws.
Right, and they went into the weeds on exactly which services they swapped out. For example, they left Fastmail, which is an Australian company, and moved their email and calendar to a German provider called Uberspace. They also moved all their code repositories from GitHub to Codeberg, which is a German-based nonprofit. They even bought a new Pixel 9a phone and installed GrapheneOS on it to de-Google their life as much as possible, while using Molvad for their VPN since it is based in Sweden and does not keep locks.
It is a really thorough setup, but the Hacker News comments immediately zeroed in on some of the technical claims the author made. In the article, the author mentioned they initially tried a service called mailbox.org, but left because they claimed you could not send emails from any address on a custom domain without a weird workaround. The comments completely debunked this.
Yeah, that was funny to read. Users like DinoWars and Mental Gear chimed in saying they have been using mailbox.org with custom domains and catch-all wildcard addresses for years without any issues. It seems like the author just missed a setting in the interface, but that sparked a really deep technical tangent about email spoofing and security.
Exactly. A user named Aquadraco pointed out a potential flaw, saying that if you authorize mailbox.org servers to send on behalf of your domain, anyone with an account there could theoretically impersonate your domain. But then others jumped in to clarify how modern email security works, noting that proper SPF, DKIM, and DMARC records prevent that kind of spoofing from actually reaching an inbox. It is classic Hacker News, taking a small detail from a blog post and turning it into a masterclass on SMTP authentication.
I also thought the geopolitical debate in the comments was super interesting. Someone questioned why the author would leave Fastmail, pointing out that if you want to keep your data away from both the US and the EU, moving to Germany does not exactly solve the problem. But another user, who was an EU citizen, made a great point. They said that as an EU citizen, they at least have some democratic influence over EU policy. A government halfway across the world does not even have to pretend to care about your rights.
That makes a lot of sense. It is about choosing the jurisdiction where you actually have a voice. Speaking of having things locally, let us move to our next story, which is just wild from a hardware perspective. Someone posted a video on X demonstrating an iPhone 17 Pro running a 400 billion parameter large language model.
This got over 500 points, and for good reason. For context, the iPhone 17 Pro only has 12 gigabytes of RAM. A 400 billion parameter model, even heavily quantized, is massive. It should be completely impossible to run this on a phone. But they pulled it off using a technique Apple actually published a paper on back in 2023, called LLM in a Flash.
Right. The secret sauce here is the SSD. They are streaming the model weights directly from the phone's solid-state drive to the GPU. With the new M5 generation chips in these devices, the SSD speeds have essentially doubled, making this kind of data streaming viable. But it's not just raw speed, it's also how the model is structured.
Exactly, Sarah. The Hacker News comments really dug into the architecture. This is a mixture of experts model, or MoE. Instead of lighting up the entire 400 billion parameters for every single word it generates, the model routes the query to specific smaller expert networks. A commenter named Ornearness explains that because the phone only has 12 gigs of RAM, you can realistically only fit one or two experts in memory at a time. So the phone is constantly swapping these experts in and out of the flash storage on demand.
There was a really interesting debate about how efficient this actually is. A user named Zazbot234 pointed out that expert routing choices are not uniform. Some experts are used way more often than others, so the operating system's file cache can actually keep the frequently used ones in RAM while evicting the rare ones. It is a brilliant combination of machine learning architecture and traditional operating system memory management.
Simon Willison even popped into the thread to link his own write-up on the Apple paper. It really feels like we're on the bleeding edge of edge AI right now. Though I had to laugh at one of the comments from a user who said they had a dream that everyone had super intelligent AIs in their pockets, and yet all they did was doom scroll and catfish until the world ended.
It is funny because it is true. We have literal supercomputers in our hands, and we use them to argue with strangers on the internet. Which is a perfect segue to our next story about a platform where developers argue with each other. The Register published an article titled, "GitHub Appears to be Struggling with Measly 3.9's Availability."
This one hit close to home for a lot of people. The article highlights that GitHub has had a really rough month. Copilot, GitHub Actions, pull requests, and notifications have all experienced significant outages. The Register pointed out that GitHub is struggling to maintain even 99.9% uptime, which is the 3.9 standard for enterprise service level agreements.
At first glance, 3.9 sounds pretty good, but as the comments pointed out, 99.9% uptime still allows for about almost 9 hours of downtime a year. And when that downtime happens in the middle of the workday for a company paying millions of dollars for GitHub Enterprise, it is a massive bottleneck.
There was a really nuanced debate in the comments about how we measure uptime. A user named 827A argued that it is a bit unfair to say GitHub is down just because one feature, like Copilot, is offline. If you do not use Copilot, you do not care if it is down, as long as your core Git push and pull operations work.
But another commenter named Dijksterhouse brought the receipts. They linked to an unofficial status tracker showing that in the last 90 days, none of GitHub's individual services hit 3.9s. Even the core API was sitting at 2.9s, around 99.69%. So it's not just the fancy AI features failing. The fundamental infrastructure is wobbling.
And the financial implications for this are huge. Enterprise customers have a service level agreement that guarantees that 99.9% uptime. When GitHub misses it, they owe these companies service credits. But as one person noted, getting a discount on your next bill does not really make up for the fact that your entire engineering team was blocked from merging code for 3 hours on a Tuesday. It really highlights the danger of centralizing so much of the software industry on a single platform owned by Microsoft.
Which ties in beautifully to our fourth story today. It's about a concept called POSSE, which stands for Publish on Your Own Site, Syndicate Elsewhere. The link was to the IndieWeb Wiki, and it generated almost 400 points of discussion.
For those who might not be familiar, POSSE is a philosophy for content creators and developers. Instead of writing your blog post on Medium or posting your thoughts directly to X or Threads, you publish everything on your own personal website first. Then you use tools to automatically syndicate or copy that content out to the social media silos with a link pointing back to your original post.
The idea is all about owning your data. If a platform goes down, changes its algorithm, or bans your account, you do not lose your content because the canonical home is a server you control. But the Hacker News discussion really highlighted how much friction the big tech platforms have introduced to stop people from doing this.
Yeah, a user named Nickboo pointed out that while POSSE is a great way to work in public, it is incredibly hard to automate these days. Social media platforms purposefully make their APIs expensive or restricted because they do not want you syndicating content. They want you typing directly into their apps.
And even if you do manage to syndicate, the algorithms actively punish you. Another commenter mentioned how platforms like Facebook and LinkedIn will heavily deprioritize any post that contains an external link. They want to keep users on their site to show them ads. That is why you see so many people posting a thought and then writing link in the comments. It is a hack to get around the algorithm's penalty for outbound links.
Someone brought up a tool called Posties, which is an open source scheduler that helps manage all these API quirks across different platforms, but it still requires a lot of setup. I think a user named Taurus Noises brought up a valid counterpoint too. They said that as a reader, seeing people cross-post the exact same message across 5 different platforms can feel a bit impersonal and spammy. It feels more like broadcasting than actually having a conversation with a specific community.
That is a fair critique. Every platform has its own culture and context. A post that does well on Hacker News might completely flop on Instagram. but I still respect the core ethos of Posse. Building your own digital house on land you actually own is never a bad idea, even if the syndication part is messy.
Absolutely. Moving on to our final story, and it is a heavy one. A tragic incident at LaGuardia Airport in New York. The BBC reported that an Air Canada passenger plane collided with a ground firefighting vehicle on the tarmac. Tragically, two pilots died and over 40 people were injured.
It is an awful situation. The fire truck was actually responding to a different incident with a United Airlines plane when the collision happened. The airport was shut down for hours, causing massive flight chaos. But what I found really compelling was how the Hacker News community responded to this news. Instead of just speculating about the crash itself, the discussion immediately pivoted to the systemic underlying issues in the aviation industry.
Right. A user named Apollo49 kicked off a huge thread saying it's wild that in 2026, with billions of dollars in the aviation industry, we still rely so heavily on stressed humans talking over unencrypted radio frequencies to manage ground traffic. They argued that runways and taxiways should be digitally locked and tracked, with screens in every single ground vehicle.
And the human toll of the current system is staggering. A commenter named Matthew K.N. shared a personal story about their father, who was an air traffic controller. They said he is forced to work 6 shifts a week, including mandatory overtime and overnight shifts. There is literally not a single day of the week where he does not spend time in the tower.
When you hear things like that, it makes these accidents feel less like freak occurrences and more like inevitable systemic failures. The community drew some really stark comparisons to the trucking industry. A few users pointed out that commercial truck drivers are legally mandated to use electronic logging devices to ensure they do not drive for more than 11 hours a day. If they do, they face massive fines or lose their license.
Yet the people responsible for keeping thousands of passengers safe in the sky and on the runways are working 100-hour weeks because of chronic understaffing. Another user pointed out that because air traffic controllers are federal employees deemed essential, it is illegal for them to strike for better working conditions. They get paid time and a half for the overtime, but the burnout is very real and incredibly dangerous.
It is a sobering reminder that all the advanced technology in the world, the planes, the radar, the automated landing systems, ultimately relies on human operators. And if we do not take care of those operators and give them modern tools and reasonable hours, the whole system breaks down. It will be interesting to see what the National Transportation Safety Board concludes in their investigation, and if it finally forces some modernization in ground control tech.
We will definitely keep an eye on that as the story develops. And that brings us to the end of today's episode.
Thanks so much for joining us for episode 344. We covered a lot of ground today, from personal server setups in the EU and AI running on iPhones, to the struggles of GitHub, the indie web, and the realities of modern aviation infrastructure.
If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. We will be back tomorrow to break down the next batch of top stories from Hacker News. Have a great day, everyone.